Blog Talk Radio.
Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime and violence if we all agree to do one thing: share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talents, share our finances, but most of all, let's share our love. This is the Female Solution. Join me, Naima Latif, every morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, as we bring you stimulating discussions about the issues affecting our lives. If you're listening online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution, press the blue button that says follow and get our daily topics every morning directly to your email and your smartphone.
Hi, I'm Naima Latif, executive producer of the Female Solution Radio Show. We invite you to call in 515-605-9325 and participate in this daily think tank as we examine the challenges we face and develop solutions that restore peace and harmony. We are global transformers, changing the world from the way it is to the way it should be. We are one. Wherever we live on this earth, we are one human family. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to extend a greeting to all the members of our family, whenever and wherever you may be listening around the world. To our family in China, Ni Hao. In India, Namaste. In Japan, Konnichiwa. In Korea, Annyeonghaseyo. In Russia, Zdravstvuyte. In Germany, Guten Tag. In Poland, Dzień dobry. In France, bonjour. In Spain, hola. In Italy, ciao. In Egypt, ahlan wa sahlan. In Ghana, akwaba. In Nigeria, peleo. In South Africa, sawubona. In Senegal, nangadef. In Kenya, jambo. In Israel, shalom. In Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Saudi Arabia, assalamu alaikum. Greetings. And may peace be upon you all.
Tune in to Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green on Thursdays at 7 a.m. Central Standard Time and 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time to hear great topics and stories on grief and turn you into victory. Join Dr. Debbie Green to listen to stories of triumph and learn how to overcome. You are not alone in your life, and there is hope in the darkest hour. This is your time to learn strategies and solutions to improve your life. It's your time. So join Dr. Debbie Green with Soulful Solutions and call in on Thursday at 7 a.m. Central Standard Time and 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time at 515-605-9325 with comments and questions. Look to hear from you real soon.
Grand Rising, and thank you all for joining us for this edition of the Female Solution Global Radio TV Show. We're here for Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green. And if you have not heard Dr. Debbie Green, you're in for a treat. This is your free therapy session every Thursday morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central. And, of course, if you're on the East Coast, that's 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. If you're in Mountain Time, it's 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. And if you're on the West Coast, Pacific Time, it is 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. And we've got some West Coast people that get up early in the morning to hear this show. So we appreciate you all. And we've already got listeners on the switchboard because we've got folks that want to hear our guests for the second time. We've invited back Dejon Green. Dejon Green is sharing his ideology on purpose and the understanding of the struggle, challenges, and obstacles that make us a better person. Purpose is a pattern of life that we seek and create at the same time to fulfill in our life. So please join us with Dr. Debbie Green and her guest to discover how to prepare and win the battle against adversities to accomplish the task. We're looking forward to another stimulating conversation with our guest, DeJohn Green, and we're looking to learn different approaches to a much-needed thing in our lives. Many young men are challenged today because of the influences of mass media, social media, and the general culture that has evolved in this world. Much of it is hostile toward young black men who are seeking self-expression and also self-discovery. Many young men grew up without the guidance of a father in the home for various reasons, and we keep forgetting that we've had a series of wars that take away young men who are of the child-producing age, and that has an impact. Many young men who come back are damaged from battle. They're damaged from that experience of being forced to kill someone you don't know for a reason that's hardly explained, and later you discover it really had nothing to do with you at all, but others were willing to put your life at risk for their gain. So there's a lot of anger, a lot of hurt, a lot of disillusionment. And you have many young men who have been raised without fathers in their lives or with fathers who suffer from the emotional damage of the era in which they were raised, and they turn to alcohol or drugs to soothe the pain. Some of them ended up serving prison time for acts committed while under the influence or acts committed out of desperation, because economic opportunities were not readily available or they were not able to take advantage of the opportunities because of their own personal circumstances. So we've had several generations of young men who have had to find their way without guidance or support, and many of the women who did the best they knew how did not always have the best examples that they could follow. How do you mother a young man in a society that's hostile to him? How do you build his self-esteem and sense of self-worth and self-confidence? How do you show him what a healthy, loving, intimate relationship looks like? How do you help him evolve into his best self? Many young men have had to make it as a result of trial and error, and a whole lot of trials and a whole lot of errors. And the society isn't always very forgiving when young men make mistakes. And the young women who love them are often themselves misguided and seeking some kind of confirmation of their own self-worth. And often they don't have the wisdom in knowing how to deal with their own inner wounds, much less the inner wounds of a man. And so we have several wounded people that are trying to help each other. So we want you to join us. Dr. Debbie Green and our wonderful guest returning, DeJohn Green, to give us that insight on how a young man may overcome the challenges of life and evolve into his best self. He may overcome the challenges, he may gain wisdom from his experience, and he may learn forgiveness for those who may have disappointed him. And he may develop himself so that he can then serve as an example for those following him. So now we're going to hear the words of wisdom from our dear sister, Dr. Debbie Green.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. Welcome to Soulful Solution, and I'm Dr. Debbie Green. It's an honor to be with you again. Wow. Good morning, Naima. How are you doing?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
I am wonderful. I am wonderful. We have kind of a wet weather here in Atlanta, but other than that, we're doing pretty good. You know, I call it liquid sunshine.
I love liquid sunshine, yeah.
Absolutely. So, you know, this topic was just so invigorating that, you know, we decided to do this one more time, you know, and I'm just honored that he gave me the opportunity, because he should be on about the 8:30 hour,
mm-hmm.
Gave me the opportunity to interview him, and it's just really intriguing to find, you know, a young man that has not so much all of it together, but at least have an area where he feels comfortable discussing. Because,
yeah.
You know, as we know, our young black men are, you know, going through, let's just say, some difficulties in life right now. And I just think just anything that is encouraging, that it will be a wonderful thing for us to hear, especially in these days and times.
Yes.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, he should be on, as I said, about the 8:30 hour. But what I want to do
for the Midwest, that's the 7:30 hour, just in case.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
For those who want to, we gotta wait a whole hour and a half. Though, so yeah, for us, it'll
be. And he's actually on your schedule because he's in Texas.
Oh, great. Okay,
yes.
Well, that's wonderful. Yes, well, for those who want to see a visual, you can go to Facebook and go to Soulful Solutions, and you will see the beautiful face of Dr. Debbie Green. And you'll see my big smile.
Yes. I want to talk about purpose a little bit, because I know that one thing about purpose is, as I was sharing it with some of my clients as well, and they said, you know, when I go through depression, I lose purpose.
Mm.
You know, when I have a whole lot of anxiety, I lose purpose. When, you know, when my family forsakes me, I lose purpose, you know. And it's like purpose is one of those things that can be interrupted if we're not careful. And I think purpose comes definitely with living an intentional life, you know, an intentional life such as, you know, what am I doing? What am I really doing? And is it something productive? Is it something that I can say I'm proud of what I'm doing, you know? And is it something that others can be helped by what I'm doing? So purpose is like a two-way street. You help yourself and you help others as well. And we can look at a lot of purposeful lives in the world as people live. You know, they go through all of the adversities, the struggles, the obstacles, the hindrances, but that still doesn't stop purpose.
Right.
Okay? It doesn't stop purpose from doing its greatest work. I think that when we lose purpose, Naima, is when we give up on life.
Yes. And that's when people get to the point where they're ready to take their life, because they don't see a purpose for their life. And usually it's some temporary thing, but at the time, it just seems so all-consuming. I mean, something such as even the breakup of a relationship, and especially if you put your heart and soul into someone and then they leave you. And in that time period, you are feeling as if you lost the purpose for your life because you didn't see a bigger picture and you couldn't get yourself out of that mindset of I've lost everything. And you really haven't, you know, just a person may have moved away, but that only makes room for another person or another interest or another focus for your life. But in the mindset that we're in, we can feel that we've lost everything and we don't have a reason to live. That's why that depression that comes with a loss of someone you love or something you love, even losing a job that maybe that job identified who you are. You know,
yes.
That made you feel like you matter, you had importance, you had worth. And then, you know, you're fired or the company closes down or something happens and now you're no longer that person connected to that title and you don't see a purpose for your life. And
right.
Then thinking, well, what do I have to live for? Because you're not seeing the bigger picture of who you are. So it can easily happen. You can lose purpose when you lose something in your life and you think that thing was the only thing that gave you purpose.
Yeah, and what I'm noticing, just from my experience, I notice that when people struggle with purpose, they're focusing on the have-nots.
Mm.
When you focus on the have-nots, then you can't focus on the have.
Right.
Which, you know, I have not love. I have not, you know, joy. I have not, you know, nurture from parents or nurture from friends. It's always focusing on the have-nots. And then when we do that daily, what it does, it distracts us from the purpose. Now, the purpose doesn't go anywhere because it's linked to our gifts. Our gifts are from going through hardship. Our gifts are going through, I call it living testimonies.
Mm-hmm.
Living testimonies is when you go through something that you might have thought that was extremely difficult, but then you survived it. So your survival mode then brings life to the testimony, which then brings life to the purpose.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing how that happens,
yeah.
You know, and it's like once you realize that you are living not just a life of just everyday, ordinary, circumstantial, you know, substantial things, that the purpose is way greater. So here comes, like, for example, here comes this great tragedy, but you survived it.
Yeah.
I mean, most people might have done something else, but you survived it. So it's either going to do one of two things. It's either going to cause a deterrent in your life, or it is going to, you know, push you into a whole nother life, period.
Right.
You know, so, and then that's a predeterminer, which means that what do you want to do with this crisis, this abuse, this tragedy? You know, are you just going to be the victim of it, or are you going to be the victor? So it's either that's what life is asking you, and I think it's bearing crosses. We bear crosses for to not just help ourselves, but to help others. And bearing crosses is any difficulty you went through in life, because we're more alike than we are different. So therefore, someone that you're going to run into at some given point in your life is going to have experienced the same thing you experienced. Whether you know, you could just have a casual conversation with a stranger and realize that, oh wow, hey, I went through the same thing you went through.
Yeah.
You know. We find this all the time. Okay,
yeah.
So what's up with that? You know, is the universe telling you something? Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's telling you that what you went through didn't kill you but make you stronger.
Right. And you can give hope to somebody who might be in the midst of the struggle and they don't know how they're going to come out
correct.
Of it. They don't. They're not sure they can survive it. So they need to hear from someone who did survive. So that's what your purpose for going through this is, so that you can give some hope and some encouragement to somebody who's really struggling with the same thing, but they're not at the stage where they've come out of it yet. And so they need to see that this is survivable. I've known of people who have, say your house burns down. That's one of the biggest losses a person can experience. The destruction of your dwelling and all of your memories that are in it, all of the things that you value. And, I mean, of course, they're just things, and they can be replaced. But when you are in the midst of that experience, it seems so overwhelming. And at the time, you can only think of the losses. Oh, the mementos, the memories, the furniture, the photographs, the memories, you know. And you're thinking that you've lost everything, but your memory is still here. The thing may represent an event or a person or a time, but the memory is always with you. So you really have not lost your memories. You lost things that represent the memories. So getting past that is a big challenge when you've lost the place where you live and all of your things. But when you meet somebody, oh, well, you know, we lost our home in a tornado or a flood or a hurricane or a fire. Yes, we lost everything. But we were able to resettle and rebuild, and I got new things, and, you know, I'm fine. And so you realize, oh, this is survivable. I didn't really lose everything. I lost mementos and maybe documents and things like that, but everything is replaceable that really matters. And if I came out with my life, then that really is the only thing that matters. I survived. So those are things that challenge us. But when we meet somebody that has gone through it and come out of it and survived it, then we realize it's survival. It's survivable.
Right. It's absolutely correct. I think that's anytime I talk to a survivor, and I talk to survivors quite often, because one thing about the work that I do on the outside, I deal with people who go through really major, depression episodes that reoccur, reoccurrent. Like, it's not just it's just one time, but most of the patients or clients I have been dealing with depression for well over, 15 years.
Mm.
So they have a ongoing type of experience with survival. And I say with survival, some people think survival is just getting up every day, going to work or doing whatever you do without, any stressors. But when you have depression, if I can relate this to mental illness, when you have depression, that's extremely hard just to get up every day and continue your journey. Because, again, you don't have the energy, you don't have the drive, you don't have the motivation. So now the purpose is, like, so far from you. So a person has to go to psychotherapy to find their purpose again. Because usually if you are dealing with mental illness and you're not getting the proper psychotherapy treatment, finding your purpose may be more difficult than, than most. I mean, I'm not saying that it's impossible, that you can't do it, but it's going to be more difficult because you have to make a determination and create and get back, as I would say, in the lines of life and continue to do the greater thing that you were designed to do.
Yes, depression can be so paralyzing because you don't have the energy to get up and do things. I've seen people go through depressions. They don't even have the energy to get up and wash themselves every day. And it can be several days and no shower and haven't brushed their teeth. Just so lacking energy because of the depressed state of mind that they're in. They don't have the ability to make themselves get up and function in life. And you can go for several days in that state and not realize that I need help. I'm not able to recharge my own battery. I need something to assist me because I'm stuck here. And you have many people who get stuck in that state of depression for a while. I mean, we even see them sometimes, and we talked about this earlier this week, the unhoused, the homeless people.
Yes.
They gave up on life and just couldn't. And once you get in that state, it's hard to come out of it because then it becomes a state of being. You just give up. And it can happen.
Absolutely. Yes. It's extremely one of those things that when you experience it, whether it's the first time or the 50th time, it gets harder and harder every time.
Yeah.
Because it really does a major, it's pressure. It's pressure on the mind, pressure on the heart, pressure on the soul.
Yeah.
And it's heavy. It's extremely heavy. So it makes a person feel that, again, that they can't come out of it, so they start self-defeating, self-sabotaging, leading to self-destruction. So, clinicians like me have to get it when it is, I call it at the top of the brain, because when they get down in the rabbit hole, it's kind of hard to pull them out. But if they want, as long as they don't lose hope, that's all that matters, because hope is the only thing that keeps them alive, Naima. If they ever lose hope, then they go into suicidal ideation and think that they're better off not here on the earth. And, you know, as I said, you know, because we're talking about purpose, I was talking to one of my adolescents to the hospital yesterday. It's a 15-year-old young man. And he's like, I'd just be better off dead. I said, why is that? He said, because I don't need to live anymore.
Mm.
He said, because it just doesn't seem like I'm going to have a family because my family's in uproar. They're, you know, everybody's fighting. They're going through divorce. No one cares about what I think.
Mm.
You know? So he didn't see his purpose in life. He didn't see any outlet of, you know, who he was. And, you know, the thing about it is his parents don't even know he's taking this. He tells us this, but his parents doesn't know. So we being clinicians, we have to kind of examine it a little bit and find out, okay, how serious are you? You know, mm-hmm. Do you have a plan in place? Are you going to act on this plan? How often do you take this plan? If you do, how long does it last? So we asking all these questions. And this is just a 15-year-old
mm-hmm.
young man, child, right?
Wow.
So
wow.
As I told him, because I just didn't linger on that thought, because usually I don't. I'm like, okay. I said, well, I said, you do have purpose. I said, even though your father's not present, I said, don't you want children one day?
Mm.
He said, well, I don't even know. I said, well, wait, maybe you want children so you can show them, you know, even though your father didn't stay with you, you will stay with them and love them and show them what it feels like to have a father. You see what I just did?
Yes.
I turned around to give him purpose.
Yes.
You see? And then he sat there and he thought about it. He's like, you know what? Yeah, that makes sense. He said, because I would want to give somebody what I did not have.
Yes. And
you know,
sometimes that's the reason for that experience.
Yes.
You learn what love is by experiencing what love isn't. And so when you didn't receive something, then you have a greater drive to give it. And so many of the young men today who did not have fathers or even good mothering, you know, they want to have a family in which there is a loving partnership, there is a feeling of welcome when the children come, and they know how to give what they didn't receive because they know what they would have wanted to have. So, and it can always go either way. I mean, either you end up repeating the same pattern that was unpleasant because that's all you know, or you make a conscious choice to do the opposite because you know that's
mm-hmm.
not how you want to make someone feel because you know how it felt yourself. So it's always good when we can analyze what we experienced and then make a conscious choice of what we want to have happen to us. So we've got some callers on the switchboard, and, of course, if you're listening online and want to join this conversation, give us a call, 515-605-9325. Press 1 when you're ready to speak. And we will be talking again to DeJohn Green as he shares his ideology on purpose and the understanding of the struggle, challenges, and obstacles that make us a better person. And those struggles do actually make us better, because just like when you go to the gym and you lift weights, you know, they make your muscles stronger. If you never lifted any weights or never had to do any physical labor, you're going to have flabby arm muscles, you know. And so you want them to be strong. Have you ever seen a person who maybe they were upright and walking and then maybe had an injury and end up in a wheelchair for several years? Then you see that their legs have lost muscle, you know, and they're weakened because they haven't been used. So this is why life gives us challenges. Not that we're supposed to suffer and suffer and suffer, but we're supposed to learn to overcome and triumph and be victors and not victims. That's why.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. So do you want to take a call before we go to break? Or?
Well, let's see. Well, actually, it's break time now, so we'll take this quick break, and then we'll come back and take a call. And
thank you.
And then, of course, For those who are listening online and want to join this conversation, just call in 515-605-9325 and press 1. And if you'd like to join us on Facebook, go to Facebook and type in Soulful Solutions, and you will see our faces, and you can write in your comments, and we'll share them with our listening and viewing audience. And we'll be right back after this quick break, so stay with us.
The Female Solution Global Radio TV Show invites you to an invigorating conversation with our team of hosts Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Time. Start your week with Monday Morning Mindfulness with Zelda Speaks. Tuesdays, Self-Self-Care with Jody Susan. Wednesdays, Repairing Broken Families with Naima Latif and co-host Kareem Hamid. Thursdays, Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green. And Fridays, Health and Well-Being with Beata. Saturdays, tune in 12 noon to 2 p.m. Central Time. First Saturday, Success Strategies with Jana. Second Saturday, Wendy Williams Esquire on Relationships. Third Saturday, Move Around with Deborah. And fourth Saturday, Wisdom with Mama D. Join us Sundays, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Central Time for Soul Purpose Healing with Beata. Call in and comment 515-605-9325. Press 1 to speak to the host and be a part of the solution.
Do you want to live in a world without war? Join our global peace movement. Heavenly Culture World Peace Restoration of Light transcends culture, religion, ideology, and other boundaries to achieve peaceful harmony in the global society. HWPL is committed to bringing world peace and cessation of war through peaceful dialogue between religious groups. I am Director Shin-Suk Kim of the HWPL Chicago Branch of North America. Join us for our next gathering. Call 773-580-1501 and be a part of the movement for world peace. Email us at chicagohwpl@gmail.com.
Crime in Chicago continues to increase. Communities and politicians must come together to make a change. No one person can solve these problems by themselves, but I believe together we can make progress. Let's provide job training, economic growth, and invest into our 77 community. Let's rebuild and restore Chicago. Vote for me for mayor of Chicago. I'm Dr. Willie Wilson, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Willie Wilson for Mayor.
We have an opportunity to transform the whole global society in the next 50 years. 50 years from now, the Earth will be populated by a new generation of adults, many of whom are yet unborn. Our mission is to nurture them in childhood with love, guidance, and protection, and to raise them in healthy, happy families. If we impart values of compassion, generosity, and respect for fellow human beings in the next generation of children, they will create a world where people can live together in peace. This is our goal. Be a part of the transformation. Get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. Go to www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com.
My name is, can you hear me? First of all, I'm going to say giving honor to God Mother God and Father God, good morning, grand rising and grand awakening. To my beautiful Queen Sister Naima Harriet Tubman Lateef and Dr. Debbie Green. It's very nice and thank God to be able to hear you all, share your wisdom and energy together. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us today.
This is Brother Telus Pharaoh to Neilian MacArthur. I'm going to just give a brief little, I'm not going to give my personal comments. I'm going to ask you, Debbie, for your doctor, put your doctor hat on this morning to help me with a couple of clients that I have. First of all, I'm going to put my Colonel, United States Air Force, Colonel, United States Air Force, Strategic Command, and like President George W. Bush say, nuclei. That's a nuclear command. So, and forensic psychology, I matriculated at several universities. Troy State is where I did my forensic psychology. And I work with veterans, dealing with a lot of the issues and have gone through things. Because first of all, Dr. Debbie Green, we've all experienced trauma. We've all experienced trials and tribulations as a part of our journey. But what it is, when we use our free will, we use our free will and our perceptions of what's good and bad, then we inflict on our own conscience the depression and the disappointment in a relationship, or the disappointment because I didn't get this, or I should have this, or that man left me, or that woman left me for another man. Those are self-inflicted wounds, and we become depressed over them and how we handle those. And getting to my question, the reason I want to ask this is because what I found in my research and reading JAMA, the Journal of American Medical Association, and the last psychology book, DSM-5, the latest edition, talks about people, the main problem is what Sigmund Freud, who's the father of Western medicine, who almost OD'd on cocaine because he said cocaine was the drug from God. And all psychologists and all Western ideology in school is taught based on his ideology. He said the id and the ego are the worst things that man and woman have to fight with because they can't be honest. So leading up to my question, that's my input. My question is, I have a young lady, she's 25. She's the daughter of a veteran, female veteran, and she's estranged from her mother, won't talk to her because she feels her mother, a church lady, and blah, 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 and by the book, who got her through college and everything, and raised her to do this, it doesn't like her because of her choices, because she wants to be, she likes female, and her mama telling her in her sexual experiences while she was in college, so her mother kind of basically shunned her. But she doesn't know that her mother dealt with those same issues and those same demons when she was younger. Highly sexualized. It's natural, really, but highly sexualized and things. But her mother won't share that with her. So she thinks her mother makes her look like she has a problem. And it's not an inherited, hereditary, a spirit thing. The other issue is I have a Marine veteran. The Marine, he's married, but he has a mistress. And the mistress wanted him to leave his wife. And when he wouldn't, she attacked him physically. In public, in front of Church's Chicken on 63rd Street, right there in Chicago. And he didn't know what to do. He almost assaulted her back, but he didn't. But he left a lot of anger, and they have a lot of distrust, and it's a lot of anger. But they won't, the clients, what I find, my clients won't share their story. They'll talk about somebody else's story, but they won't share their truth. And I think that would do a lot of healing if people shared their truth. Thank you for your this love. Thank you for your wisdom. And thank us and thank God.
Okay, well, I'm going to respond because I know the question seems a little vague, but I'm going to try to cipher what you're asking me. First, it was the young lady that had the issue with the sexual identity and concerning her mother.
Her mother won't be honest about her experiences and her trials and tribulations. So, in other words, they make the daughter or the children or other people feel like there's something wrong with them. But they don't understand that our ancestors dealt with a lot of curses and spiritual things that are ancestral, and they attack us. Demons attack where they know weaknesses are. So, therefore, they attack, they're generational. So, if the mother dealt with it, one might deal with it, another one might, but if they're not honest with their own journey, with their own idiosyncrasies and their, you know, outburst of anger and how they feel about society, or dealt with their anger inside based on their perception now. Because the anger comes from your perception of something being wrong. When a baby, it feels like they're not getting their way, they get angry and mad and cry. The Bible says be angry but sin not. Anger is an emotion. It's a natural emotion when we're disappointed. We don't get our way. But we have to learn that, not to internalize that and make it look like it's the other person's fault or it's anybody's fault. But I always thought how we perceive that anger and how we internalize and deal with it. So if we shared our stories more about depression, about our anger, about our relationships, about our desires and wants, then I think people would feel better about talking, because people, we've been conditioned, just like we were conditioned when we were slaves, that the white people are better than you and your condition is your fault. You're ignorant black nigga because it's your fault. Not because they make you feel like you're lesser than. All you need to do is come over here and do like us, do like us good white folks, and then you're going to be better. So that's the way that it's interpreted by younger people and older people, too. Because when you're talking about an issue like homelessness, some people choose to be homeless. You know what I'm saying? They didn't give up on life. They just look at life and say, the life that you live in, chasing paychecks and paycheck to paycheck, stressed out, and this and that, that ain't no life. So they say that they live free and live, you know. So that perception is everything. But we need to share our own
stories. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, yes, Dr. Debbie, you want to address that issue? And thank you so much for calling in, Neil. We appreciate the opportunity to address probably something that many people are experiencing.
It's often in families, sir, that they don't share the same type of understanding or comprehension due to the fact because one wants to and one wants not, okay, which means that they're not on the same playing field. So therefore, the 25-year-old daughter needs to go ahead and predetermine that she's an independent person, you know, and she has an independent life away from what her mother might have went through, whatever generational things that traveled down from this point to another point. You know, okay, that's knowledge, all right? So once you know something, then you can do something. So therefore, you don't have to live the same life that's impermeated on you. You can choose to do something different with your children, your family. Again, most families want other family members to open their eyes to the truth and tell them, yes, I know this is this and that, and agree. But guess what? That doesn't always happen in the real world. The real world is based upon ideologies, which means, okay, it's your idea, it's my idea, is your truth, it's my truth. So whatever her truth is, she got to stay on her own truth. And she got to move on and find herself, her own identity, you know, say, in this thing called life. And also purpose, what we're talking about today. She got to figure out that her purpose is not just to join in with her biological family or be a part of her biological family, but be an individual walking on this earth independently by herself. Every person, yes, went through and has been experiencing depression of any type of woes in life. You know, we've become victims on top of victimality. But the thing about this is, how long are you going to stay that way? How long are you going to live that way? Until you realize that you have the opportunity forever and always to choose your way in life by the God you serve to give you strength in your body each and every day and mindset, then that's when things start to change. Otherwise, you will always remain an enslaved victim of whatever circumstance.
Right.
Whether it's created by your parents, whether it's created by your enemies, whether it's created by the system in itself. So until you know that freedom is free, freedom is free.
Freedom
you ain't got to pay for it.
Right.
You ain't got to bother it. You ain't got to borrow it. You ain't got to steal it. It's free. That's the hardest thing for people to realize. Why can't I have a free mind? You know, but I have to have things that I'm attached to because I say I need that thing or I think I need that thing. I got to live up to this one's expectations. I got to answer this question, dot this I, cross this T. Where they written that? There ain't no law. Ain't no law. So why would we even live ourselves and put ourselves under that much pressure? Okay? See, the pressure comes when we make the choice, and then we deal with the occurrences of that choice. Whatever that choice is, good, bad, or ugly, you're going to experience the occurrences, and that's consequence, situation, circumstance, and repercussion, okay?
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter what it is. Something from just is not brushing your teeth every day. Don't brush them every day. You will experience something, right? So everything has a wave, sir. It's like a pebble in a still pond. You just got to wait till the waves run out. Now, that's what you want to do, or you can do something while the waves are moving. It's up to you. Because that's what it's called, life. Lessons, instructions for eternity.
You
better learn now. Because ain't nobody got time. You sit there and wait on somebody else to agree and disagree, you'll be waiting. That's how I feel about it.
I like that. Lessons, instructions for eternity. Yes, that's what life is. Something else he mentioned also, which I think people struggle with, is the judgment of others, especially your parents. It can affect you. And your parents don't always share with you that they may have made some of the same errors in judgment, some of the same mistakes, because they want you to see them as infallible, when in fact it would be helpful if they shared with you that they did in fact go through some of the same conditions, have some of the same experiences, and they learned from it. So rather than condemn you, they can guide you and comfort you and let you know you can come out of this, or perhaps you are making some decisions in your relationships that may not be in your best interest.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps a loving parent who is non-judgmental can help you analyze it without condemning you, so that you come to the conclusion, well, maybe this isn't the best choice for me. But
Absolutely. We
need to allow our children to grow and experience life and learn from life and not condemn them as they go through life, because all of us are on a path of learning. And so each person's path is different. Some people may need to go through some things in order to get to that ultimate goal of enlightenment. So
Absolutely. We
must learn to lovingly not judge and simply advise based on the wisdom of our experience. And I know we've got our guest on the line, so we want to bring him in to this conversation and hear words of wisdom from DeJohn Green. His area code is 843, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah, we got several callers on the line. I'm going to make sure I get the right one. You got the right one, baby. All right. Yeah. Well, grand rising to you, my brother, DeJohn Green. We thank you so much for returning back by popular demand. Thank you for joining us today on Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green.
Yes, ma'am. It's a pleasure and an honor to be here, and I hope you all are having a wonderful morning. It sounds like you are. Sounds like there's some really good discussions taking place, so I'm just grateful to be here.
Yes, well, we're grateful to have you, and it's always valuable when people can share the wisdom of their experience and can give encouragement to people who may be going through some challenges right now. So we do thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Good morning. DeJohn, how are you doing? You doing pretty good?
I'm doing wonderful. I try to look at the simple things. It's the simple things that make me smile. So just having the sunshine on my face, or the breeze blowing my face, or just being able to get up and eat a good breakfast, just little things like that. make my morning go well. So it doesn't take a lot for me to be grateful.
That's good.
Absolutely.
John, I've got a question for DeJohn.
Go ahead.
Because I ran into a young man the other day, and we had a conversation about how to address, I guess, you know, the image of masculinity when you're challenged on the street. Somebody who says something that's supposedly disrespectful. And this is a young man who, you know, he served some time in prison. And he explains that the culture there, which he's, you know, trying to perhaps readjust, but the culture there is that don't let somebody diss you. You don't let somebody put you down without a fight, because if you show weakness, then you'll be taken advantage of. So you always have to stand your ground. You always have to be ready to you know, go to blows. You always have to be ready to defend your manhood, defend, you know, your pride and all of that. Here, you know, on the outside, it could be seen as destructive if, you know, every time you perceive someone is challenging you, you're ready to fight. And yet he feels that it's still an unspoken rule that a man does not let someone say something to him that is disrespectful without, you know, challenging him and being ready to go to a physical level. So we were talking about how to make that adjustment, because I do understand there is, you know, culture, a culture of prison, of survival, but once you're on the outside, you really need to be able to not always respond with aggression. And yet many young men feel like this is what manhood is. I don't want people to perceive me as weak. So how do you, what's the best way to say this? What is a civilized, mature way to deal with someone who insults you so that you can still feel that you've retained your dignity, respect, and manhood, and you stood your ground, but yet not lost your dignity and your civilized manner in responding? How do you say, if someone says something to you, calls you a name, how do you respond without, you know, feeling like you got to pull out a weapon or use your fist and still feel like a man?
So that's a really good question. I can see both sides of the coin. I had the privilege of doing prison ministry in Valdosta, Georgia. Valdosta State Prison. It's a high security clearance prison. I did that with a group of 46 men from different churches. I did that for about, I want to say about 2 years. So it really exposed me to prison culture and the hardness that you have to have in order to be able to live and survive in prison. And the same idea and the concept of what you're explaining about masculinity. And I do think it's very true that in prison you don't have a choice. It is dog eat dog. And if you cannot prove, or let's say show and prove, that you are willing to defend yourself, then you should be ready to get taken advantage of. And that's unfortunate. I mean, but that is truly the type of environment that one is in if they're in prison. It's either you stand up or this is going to happen again, you know. So I feel for any person, male or female, that has to live that out. I can't imagine the type of survival mind state that you have to live in every day. You know, you can't really rest. You're always on guard. And it's really sad and unfortunate that human beings have to live under those conditions. But that's really what it is. As far as what I know, I'm just being real, that's really what it is if you're in a prison setting. But to step outside of prison and to experience what it means to be here and you know, just everyday society, it's understandable to still kind of have that mind state that you have to defend at every turn, you know, defend your masculinity. If I'm speaking from personal experience, the only contact I've had with prison is going inside of prison for the prison ministry. And we were in there the whole day, by the way. We were in there from 6 o'clock in the morning to 9 o'clock at night. You know, there's no way out. You go through a series of gates that lock behind you and you can't leave. So I was really on the inside. But if I kind of think back to, like, you know, kind of being on a street corner, because it's not the same, but there are some similarities of having to defend your masculinity. I would say this: one, it really starts with perception. if I feel like I have to defend myself at every turn, then it's not so much what's going on in front of me, but what's happening within me. What's taking place within me that makes me feel immediately like I have to become aggressive to defend myself. So self-assessment is probably the first place to start. Like what's happening in my thoughts? What type of thoughts am I thinking? What's happening in my feelings? What am I feeling to cause me to think that way? And a person that maybe they're coming out of a prison setting, or maybe they were incarcerated for a time and now they're trying to live out here on the outside. I understand the struggle, but again, self-assessment is the best place to start. And if I add to that, and this is me speaking more from personal experience, I had to learn that I don't have to defend myself. Sounds crazy to think about, but I really don't. And to double down on that, it's in Psalms where it says, the Lord is my defense. He is my defense. So I know that every person doesn't think on those terms. Every person doesn't think God consciously, but I would encourage them to. I would encourage them to do so, because if that is the case, I've had someone insult me in front of a room of people. I've had someone call me out of my name in front of a room of people. And I did not respond in kind. But that was only due to the fact that I'm gonna let you know in a second. But it was only due to the fact that I understood that I didn't have to defend myself. So in that regard, I'm free. What that person says doesn't have any hold on me. What that person says or does, they don't dictate to me my identity. They don't dictate to me my masculinity. You see, only my Creator does that, because He's the one who knows who I really am. And so when I made those connections and were able to understand that, all I did was look that person. I looked at that person directly, right? My eyes on their eyes to acknowledge them, right? I smiled and turned away and walked out of the room. And let me tell you what was the result of that, because that's even more powerful, right? It took about 2 weeks. 2 weeks for the same person to come to me in secret. They came to me in secret and said to me, and this was a grown man, came to me and said, "Hey man, I remember that time, you know," he called me the B word, you know, female dog, right? So, that's a fight. You call another dude that on the street, and that's a fight, right? So he came back to me in secret and said, "Hey man, first of all, I just want to say that I knew I was wrong. You know, I anger got the best of me. I knew I was wrong for the way I responded, you know." But he was like, that's neither here nor there. He's like, what I really want to talk about is how in the world did you take the insult from my mouth to the middle of a room with everybody watching, and you didn't respond the same way? He was like, how did you do it? Like, I've never seen another grown man do that. And the thing that got me is he said, I want to be able to do that.
Wow.
he looked right at me and said, I want to be able to do that.
Not let somebody
and
provoke
so,
me to lower myself to that level. I want to be able to do that. Wow.
Exactly. So I simply explained to him what I've already explained to you. I said, first of all, there is no action or word that someone could say to me or send in my direction that will dictate to me my masculinity or my identity. They don't have that power, and I won't give it to them. So
you don't
the
have
fact that they want to exactly
right.
You got it. The fact that they may want to stoop low and hit below the belt, I don't have to respond in kind. And here is the conclusion to the matter. If I respond in kind, I'm only just recycling hate. You see? That's two people now that are stoop low. If I refuse to respond in kind and respond in love, I'm taking a hateful action or a hateful word and recycling it with love. Even though love may not say anything. Love may smile and turn away, you see? But it is much better for me, right? If I want to retain the best version of myself, if I want to
continue to grow and not let it affect, and I must respond in love. And in that regard, in the situation I was explaining, I knew that love would just smile, acknowledge, and turn away. There's no need for me to engage. I'm free. I don't have to respond to you. So I think that, again, just having a sense of God consciousness and also taking the time to self-assess as to what is going on in me when I feel challenged, it's not about what the person said or did. What's going on in me that's causing me to feel like I need to defend? And then once you take the time to make note of those things, you are in a better place and better prepared to deal with yourself when you feel that moment, when you feel challenged. So hopefully that answers the question.
Oh, absolutely. Well, we got to take another break, but you got some callers that want to talk to you. So we're going to be right back after this break. And if you're listening online and want to join this conversation, give us a call, 515-605-9325, and press 1 when you're ready to speak. If you have to leave, if you're watching us on your laptop and you've got to out where you can still listen to us on the road, just go to www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution. You can hear it in your car. You know, we got our car that can hook up to our sound system on our phone, so you can hear us as you're driving to wherever you have to go this morning. And we will be right back after this quick break. We're talking to Dejon Green, and he's someone you should know. And if you're on our switchboard, press 1 so you can be next. We'll talk to you soon, and we'll be right back, so stay with us.
Do you worry about finances, family, health, job, relationships? Are you in pain? Do you feel stuck? If you answered yes to any of these questions, help is available. Don't worry, you're not alone. It's part of the human process. You only feel this way because you haven't mastered the voices in your head. No hype, just down-to-earth, solid, workable tools and techniques that you can practice daily. It's really food for the soul. Whether you want to learn how not to worry about anything, reverse type 2 diabetes, publish a book, promote your product or service, or just make extra money. To take advantage of the deal of the day, go to ZeldaSpeaks.com or call 312-409-6619. Mention promo code TheFemaleSolution and get free shipping. That's ZeldaSpeaks.com or 312-409-6619. Stop worrying today. Visit ZeldaSpeaks.com.
Hey, it's time to take charge of your health. I'm Viata, your holistic life coach, and every Friday morning at 8 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, I'm here on The Female Solution to empower you to make choices that will assist your evolution to abundant health. I'm also blogging every Sunday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time at Soul Purpose Healing, where I bring you a spiritual chiropractic adjustment to bring you back into alignment with our Creator's love, compassion, and wisdom. Join me every Friday morning at 8 a.m. and Sunday evening at 8 p.m. for a time of unity, enlightenment, and love vibration. Shalom.
What if you could live to be 120 years old and remain active, healthy, alert, and vibrant? Our bodies are made up of cells that are constantly rejuvenating. So if we take proper care of our cells, we can literally defy aging. Join us every Tuesday from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time to learn about self-care from Susan Essentials on the Female Solution Blog Talk Radio Show. Learn how to help your body and your cells feel rejuvenated each day through proper nutrition, sleep, frequency medicine, and many unconventional methods of self-care. I'm Jody Susan. Join me and my amazing guests by calling in at 515-605-9325 and press 1 to speak. We'll help you achieve a breakthrough in your health today.
taxes are higher than ever. Every day, thousands of our residents leave Chicago to shop in Indiana. Jobs are being lost, and businesses are relocating. Let's find a way to lower our taxes to encourage residents to continue living and shopping in our city. Let's rebuild. Let's restore Chicago. Vote for me, for mayor of the city of Chicago, and I will work hard to find solutions that matter. I'm Dr. Willie Wilson, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Willie Wilson for mayor.
All right. Welcome back to Social Solutions. I'm Dr. Debbie Green with our wonderful host, Naomi Latif, the executive producer of The Female Solution. And we are at the top of an hour, and we are talking to John Green. Are there any callers in the queue?
Let's see. We've got a bunch on the switchboard. Please press 1 if you'd like to
just for a start.
Speak to our... Yes, and if you are watching us on Facebook, write in your comments, and we can bring them and share them with our listening and viewing audience. And I loved that answer. I loved his approach, and that's so powerful because really what we're talking about is self-mastery. And when you are a master of yourself, no one can provoke you to say or do anything. They can't make you lose control of yourself. I mean, can you imagine how people are? You gonna let him say that? You gonna let him call you that? You know, and the idea is, if you don't respond in kind, then you have let someone take away something from you. When in fact, no one has that power. And I think Dijon was just awesome in demonstrating the power of self-mastery when no one can make you lesser than who you are because you know who you are. And then the man ended up saying, wow, that's real strength. when nobody can make you do something. I want to be able to do that. So that's really where we're striving to get to, where everyone has self-mastery. And those who are operating on lower levels of consciousness where they do name-calling or say little provocative things or do little ugly things, but they don't have the power to create disruption because the people in their midst have self-mastery and they know who they are and they're not going to be pushed to lower themselves to respond in a negative way. That's hard to teach a young man, and men need to be able to see other men do that so that they know what it looks like, because the only image of manhood they have is, you know, fight. Somebody insult you, fight, hit them, you know, knock them out. You know, I mean, if that's the only definition they have of how to show what manhood looks like, they're not going to know any other way.
Absolutely. And what I want to do, I want to ask Dijon, how, you know, has he been dealing with adversity, finding the purpose and determining, you know, his career and where he's going, you know, dealing with any adversity and looking at the struggle in it all, because we know in dealing with life comes with adversity. It's just a normal thing. So as far as, you know, dealing with distractions or adversities that seem to be very challenging for you, how could you give our guests, can you give our listeners, excuse me, any advice on that?
I think that much to what you all have been speaking about, it's really a matter of perception. I think that, like, a good way to express it is if I ask the question, what's the difference between a stumbling block and a stepping stone? If you think about it, there's not really any difference at all. It's just a matter of how you perceive it. And I think altogether, I think just learning that concept helped me to see adversity as opportunity.
And also understanding that being in need is not a bad thing. Being in need is how you find out what you're made of. Adversity is how you find out what you're made of. It's like saying, depending on the weather that life may bring, how do you know that you're able to stand in such weather, whether it be hail or whether it be thunderstorm? How do you know you're able to stand in that type of weather unless that type of weather is taking place? So I think in some of the, I can say maybe some of the darkest moments and maybe some of the most challenging moments, that's the question that I had in the pit of my stomach is, okay, DJ, what do we do now? Where do we go from here? Is this all you're made of, that it only takes this thing to happen for you to quit? It only takes this much to go wrong in your life for you to give up, you know? Because I'm sure you all have heard the phrase that, you know, quitters never win. They never win because it's only a matter of time before they quit. It's only a matter of difficulty before they quit. But if you just switch the words, right? If I say it the other way,
winners never quit.
quitters, yeah, there you go. Winners never quit. Yeah. So if I were to say winners never quit, it wouldn't be a matter of them winning, you know, over and over. You know, it's not a matter of, oh, they're, you know, now that they're in the winning season, they're just winning. That's not a reality. In all reality, we both sustain moments of success and moments of loss or moments of failure. And so what's the difference between the person who moves through the adversity versus the person who is stopped by the adversity? It's a matter of choice and perception. First of all, they choose to continue to move forward regardless of the adversity. And secondly, they see the adversity as an opportunity to become better. So if I use it as, I don't know if my listeners watch basketball or watch sports. You know, I can use a basketball or football analogy. But let's say we're all familiar with Michael Jordan, right?
Right.
And this is a familiar story, but Michael Jordan was cut from his high school team. And we're talking about a man that God designed to be able to play basketball so elegantly that he would capture the attention of the world, you know? So there's not going to be another Michael Jordan, you know? I mean, there'll be a lot of other good basketball players, but there won't be anyone who does it with such style, elegant, and grace as Michael did. And to see or to even understand the idea that he would be cut from his high school team, and he went home and he cried. That's what that was his response, right? So adversity had announced itself in his life, right? But what did he do? He told himself, the next time, next year, when I come back, they'll have no choice but to take me because I'm going to be better than everybody else on the court. And it really wasn't about, you know, trying to prove anything to anyone. It was more so trying to prove it to himself that he was as good as he thought he was. And so he used probably one of the toughest moments in his basketball career. He used that and saw it as an opportunity to become better. And so if you begin to look at life that way, every single challenge now, instead of being, oh, I should be sad, or oh, this is going wrong, or oh, I didn't plan it this way, every single challenge you invite, you embrace the challenge. You become, as Bruce Lee would say, you become the water in the glass, you know? So as the glass changes direction or the glass changes terrain and it's now sitting at an angle, what does the water do? The water just conforms, flows, and moves. It's not stopped. It's not disturbed. It finds another way to settle. And I think that's probably the best way to approach adversity, just understanding that it really is an opportunity. And that's how we find out what we're made of. How else will we know what we are made of unless life places us in these moments of being tested?
Absolutely. As they say, the difference between a stumbling block and a stepping stone is how high you step.
That's
so
it.
The Michael Jordan story lets you know when you step up and decide, okay, I got cut, so therefore that means I'm going to excel so high
that I'm going to be better than everybody. There's no way that they cannot pick me because I'm going to be the best. And he became the best. So that's something for us to learn throughout life, that every setback is teaching us something and giving us a challenge to be even better, whether it's, you know, and I've known many people that got fired from jobs, and that was their catalyst to start a business, which they never would have done if they hadn't got fired from the job. I thought, wait a minute, but I'm the one that's been running this company all the time and doing all this work behind the scenes, and they're going to treat me like this. You go home, you get mad, you get upset, and you say, wait a minute, I am the person who's been running this company. And, you know, I mean, a classic example, if I could just use her, Mary Green had been doing these expos for a, you know, major radio station for years. And then when, you know, I guess they decided they didn't want to do it anymore, she's like, wait a minute, I'm the one that's together. I have the skills. And then now she's got the, you know, Black Women's Expo all over, started from Chicago, now all over the country now. Because she was the person who had the skills and ability to make it happen. She thought, wait a minute, why am I doing it for them? And they may not even appreciate all of the skill and effort I put into it. I can be doing it for myself, you know? And there it is. So we sometimes need the push of an adversity to discover our own greatness. And if you look at it that way, then everything is an opportunity to step higher. Don't let it be a stumbling block. Let it be a stepping stone. So, Dijon, another thing that comes to mind, there are many situations where young men are perhaps not appreciated for their skills. And I think of many entertainers, rappers, and when I hear them, the good ones, that do more than just a bunch of cussing, but, you know, the ones who really know how to take a vocabulary and turn into a story and make it rhyme and have rhythm and say something. You know, I mean political analysis of what's happening in the world, this is a skill that shows some very deep intelligence. And yet it can be easily manipulated into negativity if that person doesn't receive, I guess, guidance, encouragement in the right way. How do we deal with so many very talented artists and creators of content, which can be such powerful motivators and inspirers, but sometimes their talent is taken and misused against them. And so many elders are wondering, how did we lose this generation of performers and have them now steering people toward self-destructive behaviors? So how can, I don't know, men who are conscious or aware influence those among us who have been gifted with this skill so that it can be, in fact, an expression of creativity that inspires rather than the degenerate kind of way we are seeing our artistic talent used? What is your thoughts on that?
Yes, ma'am. It's a very, very good question. I'm very familiar with, you know, rhythm and blues and hip hop. My father was a radio DJ for a time, and I was exposed to hip hop at a very young age. I was born in '86. Hip hop probably started to rise in '88. It probably peaked maybe in the '90s, maybe like '92, around the time where Tupac passed away. And then I would say right after the 2000s, you know, 2005, 2006, it began to decline in a way. And one of its key artists, Nasir Jones, also known as Nas, he pointed that out and made it
He made a whole album about it called Hip Hop is Dead. And that's to my point. So the number one thing I was thinking of as you were speaking was, one, this is a result of this is a result of the father being taken out of the home, whether it's by way of incarceration, whether it's by way of some type of homicide, or whether it's by way of, you know, maybe that male, or maybe he decides he doesn't want to be a father, you know, his own abandonment of his family. But most of what we deal with today in society, and what we see the results of, is really the father being taken out of the home. But to fast forward now to, you know, like what you're asking about in particular, when it comes to the content of most of the musical creators of today, I think it just takes example. They need a real example. And thankfully, Nasir Jones, like I said, also known as Nas, he's still very much active in the hip-hop community. And to give you an example of what I mean, he is probably one of the most revered artists up there with Jay-Z and Tupac and Biggie, or Notorious B.I.G. He's probably one of the most revered, and that's for several reasons, more than just his, you know, his lyrical content, vocabulary, his style, his delivery on the microphone. It's more than just that. It's what he's done for the culture of the music of hip-hop. And to give you an example, he recently came out with a song called Ultra Black, right? Ultra Black. And basically, the song itself was a celebration for African-American people, but not excluding everyone else. And what I think is so unique about that is that's very brave. That's very brave of Nas to do. So the message is very clear in the song. It is a very upbeat song. It's kind of quick. It's kind of upbeat. It's a song that you will listen to and you'll kind of like, it kind of perks you up, right? It's going to make you smile. And all throughout the song, he's giving these references of African-American culture and the beauty about African-American culture. That's what he's pointing out. He's pointing out the beauty about what it means to be black in America today, but he's doing it in a way that does not exclude everyone else. It's almost like it's a type of party song that includes everyone, you know? And I speak for myself, but he makes other people want to be African-American with how cool the song sounds. And so I think just him, you know, being able to pull that off, and that was a very successful album, by the way, but just him being able to pull that off, and for these other, you know, young and upcoming artists to be able to see that, whether they're in their early 20s or mid-20s, late 30s, whatever, for them to see that, they know, okay, well, I don't have to go out here and make songs all day about, you know, getting drunk and doing drugs and you know, club culture. I don't have to go make songs about, you know, shooting somebody. I can make a song about something very much positive. And so there are a couple of different artists right now in the hip hop industry that are doing that. Talib Kweli is another one. I could use some of his lyrics. In one of his songs, he's basically saying, like, I know he's talking to his listeners. He's saying, I know you want something that bumps in the club, but it's hard for me to write that when I know that someone is suffering tonight. You know, and I think that to be able to say that in the middle of the song. Just that type of transparency, right? That type of honesty. Like it's like he's saying, I'm writing for you. Don't get me wrong. I'm writing and I want you to like the music. But please understand, someone might not make it through the night tonight. So I need to take on that responsibility of helping them as well. You know? So I think some of the most revered artists who've been around for a long time, Common, Talib Kweli, Mos Def, Black Dot. Black Dot is probably one of the best I've ever seen. And then Nas. I think they have examples to look at, but whether they take from the example or not, that's going to be up to personal choice. I'm sure you understand how that works.
But also, you know, when radio stations choose songs to play, because they can make something popular just by playing it over and over again, and we know how that goes. So they can choose to play the songs that are uplifting and are inspiring as opposed to the ones that glorify the low life. So those are choices that, and when you have a platform, that's a responsibility. And, you know, I know a lot of things happen behind the scenes that influence those choices, but we need to think about how we're affecting the world when we make those decisions. So we've got a bunch of callers on the switchboard now that have pressed one. So we're going to take you in this order, and if we don't get to everybody before the break, we'll get to you after break. But we're going to take 773-642, then 312-450, then 773-737, then 312-671. So hold on, and anybody else on our switchboard, press one now so we can put you in the lineup to talk to DeJohn Green. So first, let's go to 773-642 Grand Rising. Introduce yourself to our listening and viewing audience and give us your comments for our guest.
Peace be upon you. This is Lionel Abdul-Haq of Community Cultivation.
Hey, thank you for joining us.
I usually listen in to see what's on the menu for the day with you guys, and today I'm very moved, very touched by what I've heard, and moved to the extent that I want to call in and congratulate this brother, his spirit, his insight, his apparent dedication to what he does are all resonating with me very, very soundly. And I appreciate everything I've heard pretty much. And I would like, I think it would be very important to give his information more. I had listened for a long time. I still don't, I got his name, but I don't know anything about where he's coming from other than the spirit and the direction of his commentary. Very, very insightful. My work is very much similar to what you've articulated. Community Cultivation Consultants is a faith-based agency that focuses on culture and education. And our endeavors have produced reviews from the Video Library, which is a series of articles that focus on movies, music, and television and their impact on social behavior. And we've also done a radio show, a jazz radio show, called Community Cultivations on the Air, in which we focus on the impact of jazz music in particular on social behavior and how it has been pushed to the back burner and taken off the mainstream, basically because it was doing just that. It was bringing people together. It was raising people's level of consciousness. And as the movie United States versus Billie Holiday clearly articulated, it was targeted. Jazz music in particular, not just Billie Holiday, was targeted just as the NAACP and all the other African-American organizations were identified as being potentially capable of producing a black messiah and therefore had to be eliminated and undermined. So I think we have a lot in common, brother. I don't want to take up a lot of time. I want your number. I want to be able to get in touch with you. I'd like to talk with you directly.
All right. Fantastic. We can definitely make that happen. So we'll make sure to make that connection. Thank you so much, Brother Lionel Abdul-Haq, for calling in. Of course, you can hear him every first Monday of the month on Monday Morning Mindfulness with Zelda Speak.
Okay.
On in. Yes,
okay.
Absolutely. Regular voice of wisdom. We've got to take a break now. So 312-450 and 773-737 and 312-671 and 779-801. Hold on. We'll be right back after a quick break and take all of your, and then we'll get some responses from our guests.
Yes, you're very popular, Dijon, definitely. You've inspired many. So we will be right back after this quick break. We want you to stick and stay. Don't stray away. We'll be back in a moment. Stay with us.
Hi, this is John Alexander.
And I'm Naima Latif. Meet people like you who are making a positive difference in the world.
Big difference.
Watch us every day on The Media Connection at www.youtube.com/TheMediaConnectionTV.
YouTube it. We'll see you soon.
There are people who choose to make a positive difference in the world. Our job is to bring you their stories to motivate you to do the same. Join us each week, host John Alexander and Naima Latif, as we bring you the educators, entertainers, elected officials, religious leaders, and community activists whose works are transforming this world. Find out how you can make a difference, too. Be inspired. Watch The Media Connection.
Mondays at 5 p.m. and Tuesdays at 12 noon on cable TV, Channel 19 in Chicago. And other cities, check your local cable listings.
Hallelujah, greetings in the spirit of Wayo and Yah Shalom. Wayo means we are one. Yah is Hebrew sacred name for God, and Shalom means peace. I'm Evangel Mamadi Love Yah Nubian, and I'm inviting you to join me every fourth Saturday from noon to 2 p.m. Wisdom with Mamadi. Call in number 515-605-9325. Wisdom. Women in support of daughters on motherhood preparation. And spiritually speaking, men who do the will of Yah are mothers too. As a Montessori educator, author, activist, international award-winning poet, and ordained minister, females, I want you to say farewell to all things, seen and unseen, that prevent your potential. You bring forth life and give birth to babies. A kid is an animal beast with four legs. A child is a human being person with two legs. Facts can change feelings, but feelings cannot change facts. A mother teaches love. Love is the arm that reaches out and holds people, places, and things together. That's what Wisdom with Mama D is about. Join me every fourth Saturday from noon to 2 p.m. Call in 515-605-9325. To share your wisdom and love souls into shape. Remember, mother's farewell. If you don't, your child won't. And if he doesn't, society is abused. Females, you are global transformers with the power to change this world. Use it.
Our kids are the future and should not be left behind. One person should not decide what is the best for our 77 communities. Politicians must work together for our kids' best interest. They deserve a safe education with resources that meet every student need. Let's rebuild and restore Chicago. Vote for me for mayor of Chicago. I'm Dr. Willie Wilson, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Willie Wilson for Mayor.
It's open. Go right ahead, introduce yourself to our listening and viewing audience, and give us your thoughts.
312-450-9851. God bless you, my sisters. Just want to pray for you and let God do the will of His will in your life. This is Sister Darva. Just wanted to come forth. Hey, Dr. Debbie, hey, all of you black powerful women out here that's doing some communicating in our Chicago communities. across the nation. I came in on the end of the brother, the young brother, I believe, that was speaking, dealing with music and different events or whatever the things that he was speaking about. I was trying to understand what his platform was, but I didn't hear the whole show. But I just wanted to say that we must keep speaking community in our own black communities, all the way from the top to the bottom. We must know that we must keep Yahweh and Yeshua first, though, in our lives. And we must not look at what the enemy is trying to confuse and misuse and abuse our mind, our spirits, our bodies. I wanted to say that there's a transformation that needs to take place and is going to take place starting with Chicago. It will be on fire, filled with the Holy Spirit, though. And I want to thank all the women that's coming on your shows, you know, every day, and for what you guys are doing to give women are the birthers and nurturers, giving us a chance to come out to speak about things that we're dealing with in the spirit and in the world. And so I'm just calling to encourage everyone to enlighten people and to inform people that God is still on the throne of grace and mercy. If we can just go back to our first love, and that is Yahshua and Yahweh, God, grace on demand, G-O-D. If we can just go back to the Creator and begin to love Him and love Him like we love everything, nothing else matters in this world. We talk about so much, but we don't talk enough about the Creator who created every any and all things that were ever created. And so I'm teaching my young people, the new AOL, the new advocates, organizers, and leaders. Those are the young people that's going to be heading up and leading us through the Joshua and Caleb era. And so I am saying to all of our Israelites, the elder Israelites, we must raise up and train up our children. Women are rising to teach, preach, and reach, and our young people are coming behind us. And so we must discuss things that's going to bless us, hallelujah, God, on a positive note at all times. And so I want to say I love you, my sisters in Christ, and God bless you. And Dr. Dick, I love you so much, and we need to talk. I've been so busy with so much that God is putting in my plate. And so I will call you later, but everybody else, be blessed, my sisters, and not stressed, because we're going to leave everything up. And God is going to take care of his, up to God, and he's going to take care of his best. And just pray and watch. God bless.
Well, God bless you, Sister Dara. That's a sister who knows her purpose. She's on her mission. All right now. Yes. Thank you so much for calling. And we've got area code 773-737. Introduce yourself to our listening and viewing audience and give us your thoughts.
Well, hallelujah. Greetings, Global Transformers, Grand Rising. I'm Mama D, and I'm inviting everyone to join Wisdom with Mama D this Saturday from noon to 2 p.m. on the Female Solution. The topic is Annie, get your gun. The government's got your children. And that's a subject because DCFS, our children are dying in DCFS custody, and the John Lewis Right to Family Act gives priority to homosexuals when it comes to placement of children in foster care and other things. But getting back to winners never quit and quitters never win, it is written in the Black History Bible book whose hero is a woolly-haired man with bronze-colored feet to match his bronze-colored face, that in all things we are more than conquerors. So it's not over until we win.
That's right.
I heard someone say the other day, if you can't speak, you can move. Make a joyful noise. If music can soothe the savage beast, what can it do for the human soul?
Mm. Wow.
Okay.
That's right. That's right. So all of you who are musically inclined, you really are doing soul work. You are repairing souls with your gift. So be a aware of how you use it. And thanks so much for calling in, Mama D. We always appreciate you. Look out for some wisdom with Mama D on this coming Saturday. Yes, we've got to talk about that situation and getting back our children. Area code 312-671, Grand Rising. Introduce yourself to our listening and viewing audience and give us your thoughts about finding your purpose. Go right ahead.
Well, Yashalom, Mahua, we don't die, we multiply. Black is beautiful with some black power and especially some black music.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Yes, and positive music produces positive results. So, and I'm glad that John mentioned a lot of those artists, because we always want to encourage the best of us to help uplift the rest of us. Mm-hmm. So, and we thank you for what you do, Minister Plump, and promoting positive artists and positive works, and most definitely we're grateful that you continue to have a positive impact on society. Area code 779-801, Grand Rising. Introduce yourself to our listening and viewing audience and give us your question or comment for our guest, DeJohn Green.
Well, Grand Awakening. This is Maika. So glad to hear you, DeJohn Green. Greetings to you, Naima and Dr. Debbie. I appreciate y'all totally. You were saying something when I was talking, so I didn't hear you. Okay. Okay.
Yeah,
anyway, I'm glad you came on, Dajan, because I was wondering this morning, is there an organization of young African-American architectures?
Is there an organization?
Yes, ma'am, there is, actually. There's an official registry. If you could find it online, it's like I just look up African American Architects. They also have branches within certain communities and certain colleges and universities. For example, the one that I'm a part of at the University of Texas at Austin, it's called NOMOS, and that's specifically for African American and any minority architects or architects in training. And basically, what we do is because there's such a low percentage of African American students and minority students within the program, we find resources for them. We represent we represent them when it comes to the main populace of the student body. We also represent them when it comes to interactions between student and faculty. So I think it's, to answer your question, I think it's being done on a number of different levels. At the professional level, it's just African American Architects. You can totally look it up. I've looked through their registry a few times. It'll literally show you every African American architect that is registered officially in any of the states, 50 states. And then I'm pretty sure on that same website, they have some of those college university arms listed as well. Like I said, the one I'm a part of called NOMA.
Okay, great. That's wonderful. The other question I want to ask you, I want to know about your understanding, your learning about Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and the nonviolent movement. What has been your orientation towards that?
So definitely, I would say right off the bat, I certainly stand for it altogether. I'm a big fan of Martin Luther King Jr. In fact, I haven't really selected a lot of people that I look up to. I'm very much an old soul, I would say. At 35 years old, I don't see many role models of this generation that I would look up to. Not to speak down on this generation, I'm sure they're out there. The ones that I look toward are from the latter generation, like the one you pointed out here today.
Martin Luther King Jr. And I would say, if you ask me the main reason why I'm such a believer in his cause and what he stood for and what he accomplished, is much like what we were speaking of earlier. He understood the power of allowing a person to deal with their own conscience. So when one person takes advantage of another, or when one person, let's say, when one person takes, you know, an evil action toward another, instead of the person who's on the receiving end, instead of that person responding in kind, by you refusing to respond in kind, now the person who is taking the action has to deal with their own conscience. They have to deal with their own conscience. And this was illustrated in a lot of the sit-ins, right? Ones that took place in North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Alabama, where African-American men and women, mostly of college age, some of them of different ages, but they would go and they would sit at a, you know, at a dining table in a restaurant, or to sit at a bar, and just ask for an order like a normal person, and they would be insulted, rather physically, rather verbally, right? But they refused to respond in kind, and even though, you know, they bear the brunt of, you know, being in prison or being physically assaulted, right? They were taking on the weight of that. But in all reality, once it's all said and done, those same people had to deal with their own consciousness of the evil that they did. And so I think just kind of living with that in mind, understanding that I don't have to respond in kind to anyone who wants to, you know, say something derogatory or take some evil action toward me, even though it may affect me. It may affect me. I still don't have to respond in kind. And by doing so, I'm the one who's winning out of this scenario. I'm the one who's winning in this equation if I choose not to respond in kind. And I think that's probably the reason why I'm a firm believer and a huge fan of Dr. Martin Luther King and everything that he accomplished during his time here.
Oh, great. Thank you. I've just created a poster somebody came to me and they said they had a daughter, and the daughter was asked, I think she was about 10 or 11, what did they teach you about Martin Luther King Jr. in school? And the daughter said, they taught us that he had a dream. And she left it at that. The mother asked her, what was the dream? She didn't know. So I created a poster, an all-in-one poster, to discuss the history of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And I'd like to send you one. So if you could give Naima your address, I'd be glad to send you a free poster.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes,
thank you so
thank
much.
You.
I greatly appreciate that.
There's something I just found out recently about Dr. King in putting this poster together was those students who you were talking about, the sit-in movement students, were trained by a man named John Lawson. And John Lawson, he went to Nashville and taught those who became the great leaders of the Freedom Riots and even, you know, all of the movements. Well, it was Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and SCLC that hired John Lewis and commissioned him, John Lawson, to go, James with some Lawson, hired him to go and teach the students nonviolence in the first place. I didn't know that. And that's an important thing to know. That he was the impetus behind these students learning how nonviolence worked for Gandhi in India and then applying it here in America. Thank you so much. Thank you for your comment.
Yes, ma'am.
I appreciate you so much.
Yes.
Peace.
Thank you so much, Maika. We appreciate you. And, of course, you can hear Maika here every second Wednesday of the month. She joins me and my co-host, Kareem Hamid, and she's doing some amazing things out in the farmlands of Pembroke, and certainly is a historian when it comes to the organizing efforts of the civil rights movement and the nonviolent movement. So, and one other thing, Maika, you asked about the architects, because, of course, our guest, DeJohn, is launching his architectural career. And there in the Atlanta area, Cheryl McAfee, she is a very powerful sister with 34 years of architectural experience. Cheryl was the senior program manager of design and construction for all 33 sports venues of the 1996 Olympic Games in Atlanta. and Ebony. But of course, the reason why I know her is because she was my sister's roommate in college at Kansas State University. The both of them named Cheryl, and you know, and they were roommates. And I remember her father had an architecture firm, which now she's running, and her younger sister, Cheryl, went to school with me at the University of Nebraska, so we know that family, and they're doing some great things as architects doing some major projects there in Atlanta.
That is awesome.
So, yes. Yes, definitely somebody that John may want to hook up with because, you know, as we grow, we want to make those connections. Definitely.
Yes.
So,
you
shout
never
out
know
to Cheryl and Cheryl.
Will
yes.
lead you to. So
yeah.
you definitely have to be open to it because, you know, everything is by divine connection. It is not something that's happenstance or coincidental. A connection can lead you to a major connection. I've known that over a period of my life to do so.
We got another call here, too.
You have another call?
Yes. Area code 773-960. I don't think I got to you. Yes, go right ahead. Give us your name when you're calling from and your question and comment, because I know our guest has to leave, so, you know, you can take
okay. Hello, ladies. This is Cougar Jam. Thank you all for your presence.
A question for our guest?
I heard about divine connection. But the thing is, it's choices.
Mm-hmm. So you got a quick question for our guest? He has to go. I want to give him a chance to answer.
I'm asking him to give me a little update on choices in life. Because this is why I'm as an older guy. Choices in life. And praying for those choices, making the right choices. And I think this is what it's monumental for us.
Absolutely. So John, you got a word on choice after you've had experiences. How do you learn how to make good choices?
I think it has to come down to understanding that we as human beings do not know our own way. I think just that rudimentary understanding at its most basic level is understanding that we don't know our own way. And I mean that in several ways, but the two ways that I'm thinking of right now is, one, I can only see a little far past my nose, physically. I can only see a little far past my nose. If there's nothing in front, maybe I have a couple miles, or maybe I can squint my eyes and see in the distance a little bit. But when it comes to being on one side of a choice and not knowing what's on the other side, and you're having between A and B, or A, B, and C, or maybe A, B, C, and D, right? And you're trying to figure out what is the best way to go. The reason why I premised it with we don't know our own way is because if we can understand that we don't know our own way, then we understand we need help, right? We need help. And we have two main resources here. We have other brothers and sisters that may have made similar choices. Maybe they have navigated those waters. Maybe they have the experience and are able to help, right? Many counselors is a gain to anyone, right? And we have the greatest help of all, right? The person who created us, our creator, God himself. And I think if you're talking about a person who before every real life choice, we're not talking about if I'm going to put on blue pants today, if I'm going to wear a red shirt or sunglasses, we're talking about real life choices. If you have a person who is living out their life and every real life choice that they're presented with, they understand that they need help. And they reach back or find those resources and they go to their creator, I think that they will turn out to be successful. Again, you have to be functioning and operating with the idea that you don't know your own way. And I know for sure that it's written in Proverbs where it talks about instruction, right? In God's word, it talks about instruction. It says, hold on to instruction with everything you have because it is your life. It is your life, right? So my life and success depends on direction. I need direction. I need instruction. I don't know my own way. And so by being able to live that way when it comes to any type of choice, whether it's choice in relationship, choice in academic setting, choice in your professional work or career, I think humbling yourself to the fact that you don't know your own way and that there is a God who created you that does and knows the entire story, I don't think you could go wrong. I think it's a matter of just being patient and humble and seeking out the answer, understanding that the answer is not found in you. It is found in the one who created you, because he knows and understands the purpose of why you're here. And that's something you don't want to miss. We only got one chance to do this. I definitely want to get mine right this one time. I don't get a second chance. So it's so important to understand where to go. And I think for me personally, that's got to be the God. That's got to be the God of the universe. That's got to be the creator of my soul, the lover of my soul. He knows and understands all things. So if I hand the choice over, I don't take on the pressure. I hand the choice to him, and he leads. I don't think you could go wrong. You can't go wrong with following him. So that would be my answer to that question.
Powerful answer. Definitely. Well, thank you so much, Dijon Green. We have appreciated you sharing your wisdom with us today. And closing thoughts, Dr. Debbie Green?
You know, purpose has a divine replica of the creation that we experience each and every day, which is actually designed for our gifts to procreate themselves, okay? Purpose is nothing without gifts. God gave us gifts so that we can bring them to the earth, okay? So he placed it inside of us as seeds. And as we continue to live, we go through different situations, circumstances, but even the worst of the worst water the seeds. Even the best of the best water the seeds. And the more those seeds get watered, they become blooms. Those blooms then take root. Once the root actually gives the bloom, then it is expansion, and we call it manifestation. What am I saying? Your heart, your mind, your soul, your spirit has to be all on one accord so that your bloom, your manifestation and the gifts that God has already placed in you before the foundation of the earth was built, before you were even in your mother's womb, would then manifest. Now, we know some of those things sometimes get aborted. They get aborted because of distraction. They get aborted because of crisis not being thought out of or examined, or some type of victim mentality that caused us to feel self-defeat, self-sabotage, and self-destruct. And as Kofi said, it is all about choices. So if one would choose, the greatest choice of all is to not just exist, not just survive, but to live, because those are three different things. It will be very difficult to just exist and find your purpose. It will be very challenging to just survive and find your purpose. But when you live and guide yourself and also receive direction from the higher power, you see what I'm saying? Now that ship is not going to be anchored in just anything. It is going to sail to its destination. Because purpose has to meet destiny. That's the only, it has to meet destiny. Because if it never meets destiny, then it never begins to give its fruit to purpose. And so that's what we all have. Every human being has the opportunity to meet destiny, but they have to allow purpose to bloom.
All right. Allow your purpose to bloom. Well, we
amen.
Thank you,
Dijon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Gorgeous. Coming
We've
back again
to the end
in the
of our
future.
Show today, but you can hear every show in the archives at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution. You can also hear today's show on the Female Solution Facebook page. Go to www.facebook.com/thefemalesolution. Leave your comments about today's show.
You can also reach me on my website at www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com. Watch our TV shows, listen to our radio shows, order our books, and be sure to get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to thank all of you who participated in today's discussion. And to our global family listening from all around the world, we say thank you. To our family in China, Sheshe. India, Zanyaba. Japan, Arigato. Korea, Kamsahamnida. Russia, Spasiba. Germany, Danke. Poland, Dziękuję. France, Merci. Spain, Gracias. Italy, Grazie. Egypt, Shukran. Ghana, Medasi. Nigeria, Eshe. South Africa, Ngiyabonga. Senegal, Jeret. Kenya, Asante. Israel, Toda. Pakistan, Shukriya. Afghanistan, Tashakur. Saudi Arabia, Shukran. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. Thank you. And may peace be upon you and the mercy of God and God's blessing.